I'm pulling out of my driveway. We all know what that means. It's time to drive to work. Okay, so today, I'm very excited to be talking about the history of mood swings. So what is mood swings, you say? It is a trading card game. What I've always referred to as a mass market trading card game, but a trading card game that's a little more accessible. Magic is an awesome game, but complicated. And so I made a simpler trading card game. And I first came up with it back in 1998, we're going to talk about that today, and it took me 28 years to get it made. So how did it take me 28 years? What exactly was I doing for 28 years? That is today's podcast. Today's podcast is literally the history of me trying to get this made. So let's start from the very beginning. So Magic comes out in 1993. I start working for Magic part-time in 1994, doing freelance work. I start working full-time for Magic in 1995. And then in 1998, I have the following idea. Often, when I talk about Richard Garfield inventing magic, I say there are three genius ideas, what I call the golden trifecta. I talk about the color pie, which I love. I talk about the mana system. And I talk about the concept of the trading card game. And I spend a lot of time talking about the color pie and some about the mana system. I talk less about the trading card game. I talk some, I guess. But I really, really believe trading card games were awesome. But one of the things that dawned on me was that trading card games did cool things that I believed lots of players might enjoy, but some of the, like, Magic, once again, Magic, best game in the world, super fun, but it's complicated. And my idea was, I think we could introduce trading card games. We were the trading card game company, right? We could introduce trading card games to a wider audience. That was my original idea. Like, I was thinking about sort of the complexity of games, and like Magic sits more on the complex side. What exactly is a simple trading card game? And once again, something that's fun and compelling, you know, a good game. And so the idea that I thought about is, so I said to myself, okay, if I'm going to make Magic, if I'm going to make a trading card game that's not Magic, what are the things that I could pull out of Magic to make it simpler? In the end, I sort of decided that what if it acts like a normal card game? Like a card game you would go in any store and buy. Just think of your favorite card game you'd buy off the shelf at a store. In those games, you buy a game, they come with cards, you play the game, and you just have a game. You bought a game, you have a game. The only twist would be, like the idea is it's playable out of the box, there's no necessary deck building, because that's complicated. But what makes it a trading card game is that there are more cards than you get. That when you go to the store to buy the game, you get some of the cards, but there are more than you personally get. You get enough to play with. The game is complete, and you can play all by, like, what you get is a full game that you can play. You never have to buy more cards. It's a complete and full game, much like any other card game you would buy. But if I go to my friend's house and I play, if I play Mood Swings at my house, it's a slightly different experience when I play at my friend's house. Not because the base game is any different, it's the same game, but my friend just has some cards that I don't have. Probably there's some overlap. There's probably some cards in my friend's deck that I recognize that I have, but there's some cards I don't recognize. And the idea is every time you play a different version, the game is slightly different. But I really wanted all the fun parts that I liked about trading card games. I wanted the interactivity. I wanted the card connection. I wanted the adaptability. I liked collecting and trading. I wanted all of that. I wanted a trading card game. I just wanted it a lot simpler. Okay, I am going to do an entire podcast about the design of the game. That's not today. Today's about getting it made, not about the design of it. I'll talk a little bit. In getting it made, there's a few things where I'll talk a little bit about things I did when I was trying to get it made. But they're really the nuts and bolts, crunchy, how to make the design work. That's a different podcast. Okay, so we started in 1998. So I invent this game. Then that summer, in August of 1998, I was invited to be the guest of honor at RopaCon, which is like the largest game convention in Finland. And so I mocked up my game. I literally hand wrote on cards. I had blank cards. I hand wrote on the cards using different color pens, different art markers. And I play with it Laura, who is now my wife at the time, was my fiance. We were engaged to be married, but not married yet. She and I would play. She was my first playtest partner. And I think I had shown a couple people at work, but I really hadn't played with a lot of people. And so me taking it to Ropacon was the first time I kind of played with the game with anybody. It was rough in that it was the early stages, but so I go to Ropacon, I come back, and the first thing I do is I put it into our database so that I can make stickers out of it. Instead of having to handwrite everything, I now can print it on stickers because at the time we were using sticker technology to print Magic cards. So I take all my lessons for Ropacon, I clean up some things, and I make my very first pitch back in 1998 to try to make Mood Swings. And as I sort of said, I pitched it as a mass market trading card game. It's a trading card game for my wider audience. And the idea was very simple is, you're going to sell less cards per person. It doesn't have quite the same business model of Magic. Only because, Magic is a lifestyle game. People who are going to play it are going to spend a lot more money. My idea was we are selling a card game and that some people would want more cards and they could buy more cards and they will. But some people could be happy buying one, like they buy their cards and they're done. And the idea essentially was, I think we would sell not as many cards as Magic would, but some cards, and that, you know, we could make a game and that it just could be another trading card game for us. The response I got back in 1998 was that we really weren't prepared at that time to do mass market. We were being sold only in local game stores, and we hadn't yet got mass accounts. Magic eventually would get mass accounts. We hadn't really got them back in 1998. So the answer I sort of got was, look, just not our specialty. Okay, 1999, in May of 1999, Wizards of the Coast buys The Gamekeeper. So The Gamekeeper is a series of game stores. In fact, I used to work at Gamekeeper. When I first learned about Magic, it was at a Gamekeeper. I was working at a Gamekeeper. Anyway, so we buy Gamekeeper, and they say to R&D, hey, one of the things we're looking for is it might be fun to have some games that we make specifically to sell in our game stores. And so I again pitch Mood Swings. The problem this time is trading card games just are a little more complicated to print. And they were looking to do this. I don't even know where they were going to print it. But the needs they had, just they needed something simpler. They needed things that, they didn't need things with lots of sheets and collation. And they just needed very simple things. So it was a little bit too complex for what they were asking for. Brian Tinsman, by the way, would make the game called Curses. That we would make for that project. And to this day, Curses is still sold. You can still get it online and stuff. Okay, so later in 1999, in September, Wizards gets bought by Hasbro. And when that happens, we are told, we are now part of Hasbro. Hasbro has a whole R&D team. And Wizards was sort of designated the lifestyle gamer brands. We were doing brands that were more... You know, people are going to spend a lot of time and money and energy. You know, these are things that this is a hobby, right? So they said, but if you have smaller games, you can pitch them to Hasbro. So I pitched Mood Swings. The problem there was that as soon as I said it was a trading card game, they're like, well, that's more complex than we want. And I'm like, no, it's like a simpler trading card game. But... just the idea that it was a trading card game, they're like, well, Wizards does trading card games. And Wizards were like, well, you know, that is too simple for us. And Hasbro's like, well, that's too complex for us. So it was in this sweet spot where neither side thought it was a good fit. So we didn't make it. Okay, so our next... So be aware, part of the storyline is I'm always working on this game. If I jump around years, it's not as if I'm not working on the in-between years. I'm just talking times where I was trying something a little bit different. I was constantly playing. I was adapting. And I was... Laura and I, for example, would play at lunch. One of the classic stories is... So Laura... this is 2000. Laura is pregnant with Rachel, our first child. And we're trying to figure out what to name Rachel. So we agree on Rachel really fast. But we're unsure of her middle name. Laura wanted Diana, D-I-A-N-A. I wanted Emily, E-M-I-L-Y. Both of us liked the other name, but each of us preferred our own name. And we noticed that they were both five letters. So we decided to play mood swings for it. Because every day at lunch, we would go out to the restaurant for lunch, and then we would play a best 2 out of 3 game usually. Mood swings is pretty fast, obviously. So we would play best 2 out of 3, and so we decided that for the next bunch of lunches, we would play, and the winner of that day's lunch would win the letter. And so Laura, so there's a one point where it was D-I-A-N to E-M. I was behind. But luckily, I did pull it out. So Rachel's middle name is, in fact, Emily. Okay, now we jump to 2002. So I decided that I want to try something a little different. I've been sort of spinning my wheels for a couple of years. So I decide that I'm going to start a limited league in the office. So what I did was I made a new version of the cards. This time I added pop culture images to them. I wanted them to be a little more exciting. I wanted people to get excited. And, the plain stickers weren't as exciting. So I put images on them. And then what I did is I made booster packs out of them. I think they were 15 card booster packs, I believe. But I made booster packs out of them. And the way it worked was when you played, you would find somebody else to play. You would shuffle your decks together, your packs together. So you now would have a deck of 30 cards. You would then play, I forget whether it was best 2 out of 3 or best 3 out of 5, but you would play a match. And then the winner would get the points. And then at the end, you would just randomly deal out the decks. Meaning that every time you played somebody, your deck got redistributed. So that just what was going on, you kept having a lot of variety. Because I would bring cards 1 through 15, I would shuffle them in with the other players, which were cards 16 through 30, and then after the match was done, you would get half the cards from 1 through 30. So we did the league. The league went pretty well. A lot of R&D people played in it. And once again, I should stress, the notes I got internally from R&D was people liked the game. The game was fun. My issue actually, during the entire 28 years of trying to make the game, it was never that people didn't think it was fun. Everybody thought it was fun. R&D thought it was fun. A lot of it had to do with trying to, is it the right game to make, not is it a fun game? Okay. And I think I pitch again, and the reason I did the sealed league is I was trying to explain, hey, there is a play pattern that we could do where people might buy more cards, that there is a sealed environment that people can enjoy, and that I was just trying to demonstrate that, hey, that there is a replay purchase model for some players. Some people would buy the basic game, and that's it, they wouldn't buy any more, but I think some people would buy more cards just to, much like you buy an expansion or something, just to get more cards. And some people might get involved in limited. Or the other thing that Mood Swings was good about is because it's a trading card game, it adapted itself. I would design different ways to play with it. There's the base way to play with it, but there are other formats to play with it. In fact, one of the things I'm putting up on the website, the Mood Swings website, is going to be other ways to play. And I'll talk about that probably in my design podcast. Okay, so in 2005, I convinced the powers that be that we should do some focus testing with Mood Swings. So focus testing is when you bring an outside audience and you play with them and you get feedback and learn what they like. So we decided to do, they weren't sure what the cards should look like, so we actually did an experiment where we made two different versions of the cards. One version was like the pop culture version that I had made the cards with before. We used different pop culture images, but we used pop culture images. From the very, very beginning, I should mention, Mood Swings, I wanted to have a very universal theme. I used emotions from the very beginning. It was called Mood Swings. Every card represented an emotion or mood. That was true from day one, the very, very first playtesting. That was always true. Because I was trying to make a more sort of simpler, friendlier trading card game, I wanted something that was resonant and allowed you to have cards destroy other cards and things, but I didn't want it the sense of violence, and I wanted to feel more, and my hate getting rid of your curiosity felt like, oh, my hate doesn't like things. It felt, I don't know, less, I just wanted something that felt a little more I don't know the right word for it, but a little softer in sort of the what was happening. And I thought, I've always thought emotions were very resonant. My mom's a psychologist. I did a play in college called Lego My Ego that was all about emotion. So big fan of emotions. Okay, so we do the focus testing. Oh, sorry. So one of them is pop culture images. The other one we test is we do actual photographs. So what we did is we took employees from Wizards of the Coast, and we had a photographer come in, and we took different pictures. In fact, the picture of love is Laura, my wife, with Sarah, my youngest daughter, and Sarah's like one or something. So anyway, I think I was on anxiety. So we took a bunch of pictures, and we did focus testing. The focus testing went pretty well, in the sense that people liked the game. The challenge, once again, one of the things that keeps popping up is that the business plan for this is a little bit fuzzy, that, you know, it's something new. Obviously, what I'm pitching is, what if we make a trading card game that's a different kind of audience, not one that's a lifestyle, meaning they're going to buy less cards on average. And the idea is that, you know, does that make sense? Is that a... And this is not a knock in any way against Wizards. Like, I don't know. I mean, we'll talk about when this game comes out. Like, I'm doing something we've never done. Will it be successful? At the time of recording this, I actually don't know. I think it will. That's why I'm doing it. That's why I've been trying to make it for 28 years. So I have faith it will be successful, but I don't know it will be successful. And one of the challenges along the way was that the thing they keep sort of bumping into was, does this fit the, you know, is it the right product mix and whatever? So anyway, we do the focus testing. It goes relatively well, but we still choose not to make it. So in 2007, I've been working on, I decided I just want to clean up the game and make the game the best version of the game I can. I do a lot of work cleaning up templating. I work on power balance. I work on gameplay. I'm now back to the stickers. But I try to make the cleanest version of it just so I'm like, look, I don't want you to knock it because the game can't be the best it can be. I want the game to be very strong. And so in 2007, when I talked to the, you know, once again, I keep talking to different people. I'm just sort of keeping it as a faceless person I'm talking to, but there's different people I'm talking to. The feedback I get in 2007 is Wizards has decided to start focusing on its own brands and not make a lot of other games, but focus on the things that we do that, you know, at this point we have Dungeon Dragon. So, you know, focus on our main brands. So in 2011, I finally decided to adapt it. So Mood Swings from the very beginning had been three color. The colors have been red, green, and blue. And I decide that if I'm going to get it made, I have to get it made through the lens of its support for Magic. It's Magic adjacent. So I turn it into a five-color game. And I adapt the color pie to it, meaning if something, you know, if a card bounces a card, it's in blue. If I make you discard a card, it's in black. Then I'm matching how the color pie mechanically works in Magic. I'm lining that up. I also had three rarities. I go to four rarities. You know, I'm just doing all I can. This is also the point. Originally, you would draw seven cards, and I'm convinced through doing playtests and talking with some different people that it's better if there's card draw involved. And so instead of drawing seven, you draw five, then you draw one each time you lose. You still end up with seven cards. It just made it a little bit easier to play the early turns, and there's a little bit of suspense. You didn't know everything up front. So there was you could want to draw things. Drawing cards is fun. And so I spent a lot of time adapting. In 2014, I make a version using Magic Art. Ethan Fleischer helps me make the frames. And so I make a version. This is the first... The very, very early versions of the game, like the ones I'm hand-drawing, I had the dies on it to represent the score. That idea was from the very beginning. But when I was printing it on cards, a lot of times it had numbers, and I went back to showing an actual die. I remember reading that it's easier, when trying to count things, having dies or patterns that you can recognize and count, which is a little bit easier than numbers. Anyway, just the way the brain works. So I go back to showing it having dice on it. And then in 2016, as a separate project, I start working with Graham Hopkins, who came in third at the first Great Designer Search, who was working I think, an arena at this point. Anyway, he and I start working to make a digital version of it as a proof of concept. So anyway, I start working with him to make that. Then another important thing is in December of 2016, a guy named Mark Hagen starts working in R&D. He starts late in the year, and at the holiday party in December, I play Mood Swings with him. Why did I play Mood Swings with him? Because I played Mood Swings with everybody, and I mean everybody. Anybody that would play Mood Swings with me, I played Mood Swings with. My idea was, I want to get this out there. The more people aware of it, the better. And I mean, when I say I played with anybody that literally would play with me. I played probably with, I don't even think I'm exaggerating, over 100, maybe 200. I mean, I played with lots of people. Everybody in R&D I played with, many people outside of R&D. The reason I bring Hagen up, so this is 2016, will become important, but I play with Hagen. The only thing that matters in 2016 is I play with Hagen. Okay, in 2017, R&D has a fair where the idea is if you have any cool ideas of new things to do for magic, show them off at the fair. So I'd been working with Ethan Fleischer. We had been making some adjacent games, kind of games that were use elements of magic but were simpler games. And so we take three of them. There's a game that Ethan made called Mana Clash that was kind of like Yahtzee. You had dice that you rolled mana symbols with, and then you would cast cards out of your hand. It sort of taught you how to cast spells. We had a game called Rumble that was like War, but you were doing creature combat, and we had Mood Swings. And so we pitched, at the fair, we pitched an idea called Stepping Stones. And the idea of Stepping Stones is these are games that are simpler than magic, but they introduce you to some element of magic. Oh, learn how creature combat works. Oh, learn how spell casting works. Oh, learn how to trading card game and how the color pie works. Each of them was introducing something to you. So if you played the game first, it made it easier when you got to magic. Okay, obviously there's a lot of things going on in the fair. Other things got picked, not stepping stones. 2018, Graham and I Graham was doing all the programming. I mean, I was helping and providing the cards and images, and you know, he and I were doing a lot of playtesting, and I was giving notes and things. But Graham did all the programming. I was doing, when I say he and I worked on it together, I mean, I did all the help, he did all the programming. So we show it off in 2018. I get a little bit of interest. The biggest problem is, once again, no one knows quite what to do with it. People are interested, but it goes nowhere. So in 2019, there's a contest. The idea of the contest was, so many people in Wizards have made really cool games. Maybe we should take a look at all the games that are being made internally and make one of them. I was perfect for this contest, right? They wanted a game that had been worked on. I'd been working on it for many years. Had to be employee. I'm an employee. I think it had to be something that could be done in digital. I had just had proof of concept that could be done in digital. The challenge is, I think the deadline for turning in for this thing was, I think, like September 1st. I learned of it on September 2nd. I literally learned of its existence a day after the deadline. So I missed the deadline. I did not turn it in. Mood Swings did not get made through this contest. Okay. Then we get to 2024. And during all this time, once again, I'm constantly tweaking with it. I'm constantly playing with people. But I will admit, I keep having new ideas. I keep pitching different ways to do Mood Swings, different ways to think of Mood Swings. I've been doing a lot of trying to, here's how I could support magic. I mean, I was trying a lot of different approaches. I was running up against a wall. And I will admit, if you asked me in like 2023 if Mood Swings was ever going to get made, I might have said, I might have been a little down. I wasn't giving up, but it was looking not good. I'd been working on it for, you know, in 2024, I'd been working on it for 26 years. But anyway, I get approached by Mark Hagen. So Mark Hagen, by the way, he started in 2016. In 2019, Mark starts the Secret Lair brand. And the idea for those that don't know Secret Lair is, what if we sold stuff directly to the consumer? There's a lot of ideas that are really cool, but in order to go through a store, the volume that we have to make in order to make it in a store, because there's so many stores, is really high. And the idea of Secret Lair is maybe we could do some things that a much smaller group, like we can, it can be successful with a much smaller group wanting to see it. We can do cool art and lots of neat and interesting things. So Hagen comes to me in 2024 and says, you know, Secret Lair has been going really well. They want to expand. They want to try some new things. So one of the things that they want to try is making a new game. But they don't just want to do anything. They're Secret Lair. They want to do something that's a little off the beaten path. And so they're interested in finding a game that is purposely kind of untested. And he said, remember that game we played back when I first started at the holiday party back in 2016, 8 years earlier? He goes, would you mind if we made that? 26 years in, would you mind if we made that? I said yes. And so it got on the schedule. I spent a good chunk of 2025 updating the game. In the podcast where I talk about game design, that time period is really important. A lot of stuff happens there. I will talk about that in the game design podcast. But anyway, I work on it. And then I have to hand it off in the summer of 2025. It goes to editing. Michael Shang is my editor. I worked with Creative to get images for it. Ari Zarilnik and Matt Danner were my art team, and we decided that we would use magic art, but we'd use sketches, kind of show, like, it's a work in progress at Wizards, something we've been working on, seeing behind the scenes. Corey is made my sort of, I don't know, play designer. I'll get more into that when we get into Corey Bowen, who's done lots of magic design. But anyway, it gets handed off. Then Colby Nichols does the frames, and we spent a lot of time. And then in early 2016, we got to announce the MagicCon Las Vegas schedule, in which there's a redacted event in which you could come play with a new game with me. And at the time, we didn't say what it was, although a lot of you did guess Mood Swings, because I have literally been talking about Mood Swings. For example, I've mentioned Mood Swings on this podcast many times, long before I knew it was ever actually going to get printed. So we announced that, and then the big idea was we were going to show off for the very first time at Las Vegas MagicCon. Now, as I recorded this, Las Vegas MagicCon has not happened yet. I'm hoping things go wonderfully at Las Vegas MagicCon, but the idea is that we're going to introduce it for the first time, and people have a chance to play it. The product is being sold on Secret Lair. That's who's making it. And it will come out on June 1st. So if any of this sounds interesting, like I said, there'll be a separate podcast talking about the gameplay. I will say, as just sort of a wrap up today, I normally, when I work on magic, I make something, and then 3 years later, I've had a few things that maybe were 4 or 5 years later, maybe a few unsets that took 7 years. I'm used to making something and it taking time to come out. That is the normal part of my job. But, I mean, the reason I didn't give up on this is I really, 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 to the core of my soul, thought it was a good idea. I just could not give up on it. And obviously, as this tale tells, I'm stubborn, because there's all sorts, like, I got told no so many different times. But every time I got told no, the interesting thing is nobody ever said, I don't think this is good. Nobody ever said that to me. In fact, the opposite was always, I do think this is a good game, but. And so I never gave up, and I kept trying. And like I said, I you know, we talk a lot about iteration, right? That one of the things that you do in games is there's an iteration loop where you make something, you playtest it, you get feedback, and you make changes. Well, I've been iterating. There's no game in my life that I've ever iterated on more than this particular game. Obviously, I make a lot of magic. But anyway, I hope if this, it all excites you. And like I said, I will do a separate podcast talking about through actual gameplay. I do think this is a product that, the joke I make is when Richard first, when Richard met Peter Ackerson for the first time, because Richard was pitching a game called Robo Rally, Peter said they can't make it, it's too expensive. Richard says to Peter, what kind of game do you want? And Peter says to him, I want a game you can play in between D&D sessions. So my pitch for this game has always been, I want to make a game that you can play in between Magic sessions. The thing about Mood Swings is you can play with 2 to 4 players. A two-person game is like 5 to 10 minutes. Even a four-player game is like 15 to 20 minutes. It's pretty fast. It's faster than Magic. That is the history. That is the 28-year history of trying to get Mood Swings from an idea in my brain to cards printed on paper. And I'm so excited it's finally happening. In fact, it's kind of hard to believe. Part of me is still a little bit in denial. But anyway, that, my friends, is the history of Mood Swings. And so June 1st, you too could join in and be part of the... You too could play the game on June 1st. So anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed my story, but I'm at work. So we all know what that means. This is the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking magic, it's time to me to be making magic. I'll see you all next time. Bye-bye.